Good morning and welcome to the November 6, 2014 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Ramona, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Meyer?
Here.
Commissioner Topping?
Here.
Commissioner Campbell?
Here.
Commissioner Irving?
Here.
Chairman Murphy?
Here. Would you all please stand and join me in a salute to our flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, at this point, I'm going to go ahead and open up the floor for public comment for items not on today's agenda. So the speakers can be properly identified. If you would, fill out a speaker slip. They're available in the back of the room and up at the front here. And we just ask you state your name and your residence. You'll be limited to 3 minutes. And again, this is for topics not on today's agenda. I do have one speaker slip from Elizabeth Cavanaugh. Would you like to come up?
Thank you, Chair Murphy. I'm Elizabeth Cavanaugh with your County Parks Department. We have a couple items on your agenda today, so I just thought I'd take an opportunity to update you on some of the other things that we're working on. Just a quick update. In Lopez Lake, we're having an aerial adventure park that's going to open up next month. We're very excited about that. That's a ropes course, and that should be tremendously fun. Our Cayucas Pier repair is underway, and if you're out in Cayucas, you'll see the pier and the pilings, and it's really interesting and big material. Jack Reddy Park on the Napomo Mesa, that's an all-inclusive park that's under construction right now. We're also working on a couple connector trails that are in the construction drawing phase. That's the Templeton to Atascadero connector and the Morro Bay to Cayucas connector. So those are just some highlights of other projects that your County Parks Department is working on. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. I don't have any other speaker slips. Don't see anybody else coming forward. I'm going to go ahead and close public comment and ask for staff updates from Mr. Robeson, I believe, today.
Good morning, Chairman Murphy and Planning Commissioners. I am Bill Robeson from the Planning Department.
How's that? That's better. Thanks. Good morning, Chairman Murphy and Planning Commissioners. I'm Bill Robeson from the Planning and Building Department. I can give you some updates on the Planning Commission agenda dockets. November 13th, that meeting is canceled. November 20th, which was a special meeting, is also canceled. We'll move on to December. That one is also canceled. And moving to January 8th. We have another date set for Las Palitas because we are anticipating that project will need more than one hearing to take place. And then we can move on to January 22nd. Again, the Chevron Hall route is on that date, along with the RESP, which is the Renewable Energy Streamlining Program, and a general plan amendment for mini storages and RMF. So those are kind of the projects that are going to take place on that date. And there's two left. And January 29th, we're looking at the kind of moving that around. We have the rail spur tentatively scheduled for that date. I know that Commissioner Irving won't be there for that particular date, so we're trying to work out an alternative date that will work. And then the last date for the upcoming agendas is February 5th, and we have that tentatively scheduled also for the Renewable Energy Streamlining Program because, again, we feel like that project will take more than one hearing. So that sums up my updates for your commission, and I can answer any questions you have.
All right, thank you very much. Move ahead to the consent agenda. Does any member of the public commission wish to pull any item and speak to it? Seeing none, I'll...
I should note that I was not present for the August 28th meeting, and I will abstain from that. approval of that. So I can vote on the September 11th, so you should pull the 28th.
All right. So why don't we vote? The 28th is the first meeting, so I would take a motion to approve the minutes on August 28th, 2014.
So moved.
Second.
Second. Oh. Do we need to roll on this, Ramona?
No.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Then I would take a motion to approve consent items B through I.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None? So moved. Very good. Brings us to hearing item number one. Ramona, if you'd please introduce that.
Hearing to consider a request by Adelaida Sellers for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2013-00049. Supervisorial District Number 1, Holly Phipps, Project Manager.
Does any member of the commission have any ex parte to disclose?
I do. I met with the subject yesterday.
And I, too, met with the applicant, or one of the owners of Adelaide Sellers and their consultant a week or so ago on site.
And I also met with consultants and the applicant on site.
All right. Very good. Ms. Phipps.
Good morning, Commissioner Murphy and members of the Planning Commission. Holly Phipps, Project Manager. Before us today is a request by Adelaida Sellers to allow a phased construction of a 20,232 square foot winery expansion to an existing 23,175 square foot winery facility. The project will result in an estimated 1.73 acres of site disturbance on a 533-acre site. The applicant is requesting 25 special events with up to 200 guests and requesting to allow outdoor amplified music for special events from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. as allowed for the winery ordinance. Case production is proposed to increase from 15,000 to 30,000 cases annually. A conditional use permit was required for this project because the gross floor area exceeds 40,000 square feet of the gross area. So the project site is located on the south side of Adelaida Road, approximately 7 miles west of the city of Paso Robles. The project is located in agricultural land use category and is located within the North County Planning Area, Adelaida sub-area. This is a phase construction. So phase one will result in the construction of Building E, a two-story, approximate 8,200 square foot building to include approximate 3,200 square foot barrel storage room that will include a 1,900 square foot tasting room that will include a lounge, a VIP library, and a 400 square foot commercial kitchen and the request for special events. Phase two will include the construction of Building F, an approximate 3,400 square foot office addition onto an building E, and then the building F addition onto building A, and then the building G. So the exterior renderings to kind of give you a visual interpretation of what to expect. Exterior renderings of the proposed project. So with that, staff is requesting adoption of the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with CEQA, approval of a conditional use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B, and based on the corrections submitted by staff to the findings and conditions that were submitted earlier. And that concludes my presentation, and I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Irving, do you have a question?
Not at this time.
Can I get a clarification? If I'm reading it right, they have an existing tasting room. Phase A, they're going to build another tasting room, and Phase B, they're going to close up a tasting room. Is that, are they going to have two tasting rooms at one point in time?
No. Prior to the final inspection of the prior to final inspection of the old taste or the new tasting room, the old tasting room will have to be converted to production or office space or something.
It's really not phased.
Okay. But it shows the existing tasting room converted at construction of building F. The construction of building E is building a new tasting room, and the existing winery has a tasting room.
It's my understanding that phasing is probably the wrong word. It's all going to happen rather simultaneously.
That is correct. And actually, we are doing concurrent processing, and the plans are in for all buildings.
Maybe I'll just ask that the applicant address the tasting room sequencing in their presentation, possibly. Any other questions for the staff? If not, if the applicant would like to come forward, make a presentation.
Good morning, Commissioner Murphy and fellow commissioners. My name is Mandy Pickens with Kirk Consulting, and I am representing Adelaida Cellars this morning. Before you, we have a conditional use permit, which is requesting the expansion of the facilities to allow an increase in production up to 30,000 cases annually, along with a tasting room and special event program. I just wanted to touch on a little bit of background of this area because it's unique. This region was put on the map initially by Mr. Pedereski from Poland, who bought some property out in the Adelaida area and planted some of the first grapes, as well as in this region, additional Pinot Noir vineyards were established, and these were some of the first Pinot Noir vineyards in Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties, which is also, Dr. Hoffman with the HMR Winery was established, which was the first full-scale winery in this region. And from that, many of these wines were recognized in this region. In the 1970s, the current owners of Adelaida Cellars, the Van Steenwitz, purchased a ranch in the Adelaida region. And in the 1990s, the winery was established, as well as additional properties purchased, and the addition to the tasting room and winery. Currently today, you'll see that they have around 23,000 square feet of structures, which includes a small tasting room. There's three structures currently on site, and they have about 15,000 cases annually produced with the ability to go higher, except right now they're at a 15,000 case production. This is a state wine that they pull their grapes from their property, some of which are dry farmed. Again, this is a conditional use permit to allow the expansion. There are actually three new facilities being proposed, which will accommodate the barrel storage, administrative uses, also a new tasting room, and a limited special event program to allow 25 special events with up to 200 people. Here's the site. You can see it's a 533-acre site, very large zoned agriculture. The yellow points out the existing development, which you can see is centralized and far away from the surrounding property lines. As such, you could see that the nearest neighbor is around 2,000 feet from the existing development, where the tasting room and where the events will occur, which exceed the requirement for 400-foot setback. Again, this shows the cluster design. They were oriented to be located in disturbed areas and all clustered together. You'll see that the new winery structures are highlighted in blue. And then I'll just quickly go through these floor plans. This is the main building. The hospitality will be located on the main floor, which is compatible with what's there now, and that some of the materials are a little bit darker, but that's the slight change with this proposal. Special events. The project is proposing 25 special events with no more 200 people. They do not propose outdoor amplified music beyond what's allowed with the ordinance. They have existing overflow parking area provided, as well as existing secondary access, which is going to be an existing ag road that they will improve to Cal Fire standards. And this road is just provided for secondary access. They're not proposing to use it for public access. It'll be gated, but the gate will be open and available for emergency purposes only. They will be routing guests in and out with their existing primary access, which is noted in yellow. for events and just normal operations. And then you'll see the secondary access in red is highlighted on the aerial. And so there'll be some grading improvements just to widen that for CAL FIRE standards. And then the existing overflow parking area. Traffic, we looked at traffic during the process. Approximately 27 daily trips will be added with this proposal, as well as two peak hour trips. There's a condition of approval that you have probably already seen that is a new fare share fee contribution for the intersection improvements to Adelaide and Nacimiento Drive, the left-hand turn lane. And we appreciate staff providing that information clarification since this is a new fee. There will be one small oak tree removed, and that's for the location of Building E, and that's a 10-inch oak. The other oaks on site will be protected, and they'll have biological pre-construction surveying for grading improvements to secondary access. This isn't in the groundwater, Pastoral's groundwater basin. We have an estimated 1.4 acre feet per year guesstimated with the winery processing and the events. They also have water conservation methods proposed, such as recycling water and drought-tolerant landscape. We do have one condition modification request, and I've actually had the ability to discuss with staff this suggested change, and we're okay with it. It's a little bit different than what I proposed, but basically it's a minor thing. The existing language as it reads might suggest to somebody that might interpret it differently that maybe a special event is actually limited rather than the music that's regulated, and really the intent of the land use ordinance is to regulate the outdoor music. We actually have a condition, it actually might be 38, that may be a typo, but there is a condition of approval that limits the operation for amplified music, and we feel that that satisfies. So what we did was ask staff if they could just strike through that entire sentence so it's a little less confusing for one to read, and so we're okay with whatever staff proposes on that. And then with that being said, I want to thank staff. I want to thank Planning Public Works, everyone working with us. Really appreciate the coordination that went into this. We were able to see the staff report early on so that we were able to work through the conditions of approval and some of the language in the staff report and background history. We feel it's important to present to your commission so that we'll take less time when we're actually here. And so I just want to thank them, especially the last-minute information that came to you regarding the traffic information, since that's a new item, and we're all interested in hearing about that. Other than that, this is a great project. It's compliant with the ordinance. Adelaide Sellers is excited to bring this forward and grow. They've been needing the space, and we ask that the Planning Commission approve this project. I'm also available for questions. We have members in the audience, local contractors from SCI, Steve Haymaker, and local architect Joel Snyder, Karen Architecture, and also Harry Hamilton from Above Grade Civil Engineering. Just want to touch on that because I think it's important that this project's supporting our local economy with the use of consultants and contractors here. Thank you.
Thank you. Does any commissioner have questions of the applicant?
I have one. Mandy, how did you come up with the anticipated increase in trips, 27, I think you said, trips per day?
Mm-hmm.
How was that number derived?
So we had a traffic engineer look at the existing traffic counts based on the existing facility, based on barrel storage production tasting. And so that came out to, I think they had, let me see here, they have 70 average daily trips now on site. And so with this proposal, they'd be introducing another 97. So they just did this subtraction, which is the addition of 27. Same with the peak hour trips.
So is that calculating all trips, or is that trips to the tasting room, in other words, members of the public, or is it including vehicles moving grapes from the vineyard down the road, up and mm-hmm. over? Is that all inclusive?
Yes, according to the traffic study, it addressed
the site. So you're correct in this case that the closest neighbor is 2,000 feet, so this doesn't seem to really be pertinent for this particular project.
Okay, but it is the outside boundary of the property.
Yes.
Holly, wouldn't that be within the 1,000 feet? Wouldn't the neighbors where Lone Ladrone
yes.
is and all that, they would be notified?
They would be notified, yeah.
Right.
But as far as the noise and the one might would assume with a winery, it probably wouldn't be as more intense if the boundary property
right.
boundaries.
Right. But it just as Commissioner Campbell was saying, so in terms of notification for special events, you basically you've got about half a dozen neighbors, and
yes.
that's it. Okay.
And is this a one-time situation for the year or something, or do you have to do it every time you have an event?
Good question.
Usually the applicants on a yearly basis update their site and send out notifications so one can go to the website.
Okay.
All right. Any other commission questions at this point? Okay, if not, I'm going to go ahead and open up public comment. At this point, I have no speaker slips. See anybody coming forward? I'm going to go ahead and close public comment. Staff, has any other comments at this point?
Regarding condition two, I concur with Mandy and would like to strike on condition two. The second sentence that reads, any special event with amplified music shall only be allowed from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. is allowed per the LEO section 2230.70D2I3. Please strike that sentence. And we have that condition covered in condition 38 for the amplified music, so we are asked to modify that.
Would you put that up on the screen again? So that's condition 2 on page 1-8. What are you... specifically striking this?
Well, I think we had the language the applicant provided in their presentation. Is that where we saw it?
We'd like to strike. Oh, not Ramona, could you bring up? The highlighted section here,
mm-hmm.
staff would like to strike that sentence. Whoa. Sorry. My desk hit that.
So what about the handout?
The handout refers to...
traffic.
Earlier in the week, I sent some modifications. Originally, we sent out a modification for condition two, which did look at that second sentence. But now we're requesting just to delete the entire sentence of condition two. And then condition 14, we wanted to add, prior to issuance of a secondary access grading permit, the following. So that was included. And then we wanted to add a new condition, 41, in consultation with Air Pollution Control District. They have been updating their procedures and stuff. And so they would like, prior to increasing case production, the applicant shall contact the Air Pollution Control District to amend the existing permit, 1549-1, to allow for the production increase. So those are the conditions that were sent earlier this week. And yes, yesterday, last night, you may have received a request from staff, Public Works, on a revised finding, revised finding F.
Holly, point of clarification in my mind, actually, the production increase is really only 5,000 cases, is it not? Because the original LUO allows for 25. Isn't that what you said earlier? They're only producing 15 now, but didn't you say that the LUO already gives them 25? They're just not using it?
No.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood it then. I'm sorry.
They're currently producing 15, and they'd like to go up to, 30?
Yeah. Okay. I somehow thought I saw a 25 in there that was already approved, but that's right.
So just a quick question. What happens to the outdoor amplified
music? Oh, 30,000.
What happens to the outdoor amplified music? Is it just...
Per the winery ordinance, there was not a noise study done because they're not requesting to have amplified music past 5 p.m. So if you request amplified music beyond that time, you need a noise study, concluding that it doesn't exceed the decibel level at the property boundaries. But the property boundaries are so far out there, and they're not requesting any waivers of this. So our winery ordinance allows for amplified music during special events from the hours of 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Thanks.
So they're covered there. Holly, I have a question regarding condition 13, page 1-9. this, and this is sort of
that works.
How the
there's a couple of corners right there next to that entrance, and it's a relatively high speed road. I'm just wondering if you could explain the distance that is a required, the site distance you need to have from that access in order to feel comfortable exiting that at
so,
that secondary
so
access.
So you raised concern. Excuse me. You raised concern that we're not.
Right.
I wasn't familiar with. On every driveway, they need to have an encroachment permit.
Please.
Oh, sorry, one button. On every driveway, you need to have an encroachment permit. We need to evaluate the site distance. We do that every time as a normal course of business. When I reviewed this application back in, I want to say it was March, or sometime around there, I was not aware that any of the driveways had a site distance issue. However, that will be or can be re-reviewed when they come in for building permits. Site distance, our standards are set up such that a driver coming out of a driveway needs to be able to see a certain distance down the road. If the speed on the road is higher, then they need to be able to see farther. Also, if a car is coming down the road, they need to be able to see a car wanting to come out of a driveway, and then they, you know, everybody can make their appropriate decisions. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
I guess I'm wondering whether or not, if we're uncertain at this point whether there just is a site distance problem, and we're granting a permit, what happens if later we find out there's a site distance problem, and because we're uncertain at this point, are we up against the wall then, or is there? I stood out there and cars are going by relatively quickly, and at that particular location, it just seemed like they are in the best possible spot given the orientation of that second access. It's just that, nonetheless, it seemed to be a little tight.
Yeah, I thought you had a specific distance requirement as part of secondary access or any access point, that you had to have a specific site distance. I seem to recall discussion of this with regard to the Opelow project a couple of years ago on Vineyard Drive, and I'm almost certain that your predecessor on the commission here had a specific number of, I can't remember, 150, 200 feet. Is that true?
It's not a single number. It refers to a table in our standards, A5A. I happen to know that because it comes up all the time. What you need to do before you can figure out the required distance is determine what the prevailing speed is on the road. So I just came up yesterday somewhere else. I happen to recall that if the speed is or prevailing speed is 30, that the required site distance would be about 200 feet. If the speeds are higher, then we could require as much as 400 feet. The applicant's traffic engineer is indicating that the prevailing speed in one direction is 40 miles per hour, and prevailing speed in the other is 35. I suppose somebody's slowing down for the curve or coming out of the curve, and that they've met that the required site distance is available at that site.
There may be another little issue here, Eric. As I was told yesterday, that they're having, if you see an existing ingress and egress, that may not be what it ends up because there was an encroachment from the neighbor across the way. So maybe perhaps the latest information is what you see may be different when it's built. I'm not sure of that. Maybe Mandy could answer that question, or the engineer.
Well, I can assure you that our inspector looks at every one of these while they're being built and evaluates the site distance every time.
Exactly.
And he has the tools with him to make that pretty quick work.
So just following up on their traffic study says 35-40. At the time of construction, would there be a new traffic study required? And if so, would the applicant have to pay for it? Or will the county go and do their own evaluation of the speeds along the road?
I would not anticipate the need for a new study. If there is something happening on the road that would suggest that cars are driving differently that day, then maybe. But that would rarely happen.
In other words, you're satisfied with the documentation that's been submitted?
Yes.
OK.
Okay, thank you.
What may have occurred, I mean, I was there, and approximately the same time Jim showed up. And so we were standing there, or he's in the car, and but before he got there, someone drove by at probably, I'm guessing, 70. And so this is why I'm relatively concerned about this. And if the average speed is indeed 35 or 40, that's quite a bit different. But and I may have just experienced an anomaly, but it's just something that concerned me a little bit.
And so it's a concern that
road back out onto Adelaide Road, correct? Or is there some sort of unspoken? Is there a requirement that they use the secondary access?
First of all, our land use ordinance for special events requires two access points.
Right.
So that triggers that. Additionally, CAL FIRE has their requirements for special events, which requires secondary access. This road is intended to be used for emergency purposes only.
Right.
Primary access.
That's what I thought. That was my understanding. I just wanted to make certain, because I think that answers Commissioner Meyer's concerns. If that was a requirement somehow that they had to use that road, I would share your concern. If it's only emergency only, then that's good with it.
I might be careful to add that even a road that only gets used once in a while still has to meet the same standards.
Oh, understood. Understood. I don't mean to.
In an event where that an emergency, I think people might be driving faster, and they might have a hard time making good decisions. So we need to make sure that secondary access is a good one. So,
well, in general, I'm very happy with the project. I think the project looks great. I think the design looks great. I think it's an improvement to the existing facility. I'm in favor of the project. I just wanted to bring that up as a point. Just I saw it as an issue.
Good. Then that brings to my questions, which you saw earlier in the week. And I appreciate, Mr. Honeycutt, your detailed response in providing this corridor study. There's still some questions I have. We had another project on Adelaide Road a couple of years ago with the expansion of the Wild Coyote Winery or Bed and Breakfast facility. Did you work on that one?
Yes,
Holly?
Manucci.
Did that also include this same traffic fee?
No, it did not.
So I'd like to know a little bit more about all of a sudden this is the first time I've ever seen this imposed. As I'm reading quickly your memorandum, it sounds like the Public Works or somebody anyway has been collecting fees from Heritage Ranch Development. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. But I haven't seen it for anything along Adelaide Road. We've done, let's see, we had a Halter Ranch tasting room. We had the Wild Coyote. There is Alta Colina is under construction, which I think came in under because they were smaller and all of that. So I don't know what the total fee here is just one. It's a one-time fee of whatever amount it is, $2,000-some-odd. Is that correct?
To get to your first question, this will be the first time. So this is a brand-new thing. Not to try to be an attorney, but in legal terms, it's not so much a fee. This is a fair share contribution. So what Public Works has, obviously somebody writes a check, so it feels like a fee. But what Public Works has recognized is that there are a lot of projects like this that have happened and a lot more that want to happen, and there's even a few in the pipeline. And that if all of these come to fruition, it's going to impact that intersection.
I understand that. So what? But what was? If this is the first time this is used, what's the authorization mechanism? Did the supervisors approve this as a tax, fair share, contribution, whatever you want to call it?
It's no, they haven't, and we haven't asked them to either. What this is meant to do would be to ask the applicant to address their impacts. Now, one way and an extremely inequitable way to do this would be to require one either this applicant or some other applicant to just shoulder the whole burden of that improvement, because if they didn't, they wouldn't be able to address their impacts. So this is more or less seen as a service such that this project and all subsequent projects can address their impacts. And so I guess the authority or the authorization that you might be asking about would come under CEQA. So,
well, with the project projected to only increase by some 27 trips a day, average daily trips, I'm trying to get at sort of the equitable nature of it, and you reference back, if this is the first time, but your reference documents reference back to a consultant corridor study done in 2012, and in that document, there is reference on page 7 of it of a special assessment district, which would cover a way of going.
There are a number of ways to approach the problem. We could set up a fee area, and we've been advised to explore that option further, a fee area like we have in Templeton or South County. The drawbacks to going with those options is that they require a lot of resources just for, we'll say, maintenance. In other words, you have to do very in-depth studies on a regular basis, and we could spend a good portion of the fee just maintaining the program. Whereas this one, which mimics what was set up in Oak Shores and Heritage Ranch, I think in the late 80s, early 90s, achieves the same end with much less effort. If there were a lot of projects, perhaps maybe 10 times the number of projects, then the regular fee would probably be a better option to go. That's just the way it looks today. We plan to look into it and verify that. But
well, this is in front of us because this is a conditional use permit. If somebody building a house now on Adelaide Road, just a normal application for a residence, will they be subject to a fee, this fee as well?
Only applications that are discretionary in nature, so conditional use permits, minor use permits, subdivisions, that kind of thing, will be subject to this kind of CEQA review, and therefore when they do the review, we would have to ask how many peak hour trips do you anticipate generating. And then they would, in order to mitigate that impact, they could either, do their own study and come up with their own mitigation, or we would recommend that they could pay into this program instead.
Well, I thank you for your answers. The other part of the question I have is how was the determination made what the peak hour time was and how is the fee actually calculated? So what is the, in other words, cutting to the chase here, but I'd like to know how the process works and then what is the exact number going to be what is the exact number that Adelaide Sellers has to pay?
Okay, so when we on a periodic basis, we go out and collect volume counts on various roads in the county, and it turns out that in 2010, on the same day, we happened to measure the volume on Nacimiento Lake Drive and also on Adelaide Road. And in that study, we leave the hoses out for a week or so. Turned out that the most heavily traveled time was on a Friday at noon, which is unusual. Most of our roads we get Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in the 4 to 6 p.m. hour.
Mm-hmm.
This, I think, was somewhat a relief to the applicant because they were looking at maybe 200 guests coming on a Saturday, and they fall outside that hour, so mitigating traffic impacts to an event is not something that is an issue in this case. In this case, the applicant has indicated that, or their engineer has indicated that there will be 27 additional trips per day. Typically, peak hour represents 10%, so we'd be looking at 2.7, and then 2.7 times the 2051 is somewhere in the neighborhood of $5,000 or $6,000 is their fair share contribution. Now, when they pay that fee actually matters, because it's not clear to me how they're going to phase this. If they come in for all their permits at once, they'll pay that fee all at one time. If they come in for one building 1 week and wait 6 months or a year or whatever to get to another, then they'll only pay the traffic associated with that building permit.
Okay.
And that'll be based on square footage and so forth. And eventually and add up to 2.7. One other thing you should be aware of, perhaps a minor detail, is that that fee is $2,051 today. If the cost of constructing roads goes up like it usually does, then that fee will go up based on a Caltrans construction cost index.
Okay. Well, thank you. I still think that, well, I just, either, I guess either your hands are tied or that it seems like really the cost of that turn lane really needs to be spread over a wider area, but it's not going to happen in this case, and I guess the rest of us taxpayers will be paying for it. But the other part of the comment was on
actually,
the 20s.
I'm sorry.
Sure, go ahead.
To interrupt, at this point, the cost of that left-turn channelization project will be entirely based on, we'll just say, development impact. At this
improvement there. I have no further questions.
I just need some clarification so I further understand it. I'm looking at page 3 of 3, Mr. Honeycutt. I see a $605,000 figure. Is that the cost of the lane, or is that accumulated money you've got so far? Or what? Where did? Because I'm hearing, I thought that was going to be what they had to pay, and I was upset about it, but apparently it isn't. So if their fees are going to be $5,000 or $6,000, that's quite a difference. What's the 605?
The 605 is our estimate for the total project cost.
Okay.
So that would include the actual construction, which would be the lion's share of that.
Okay.
But the design, the right-of-way, environmental review, so forth. So.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Nemoroy, topping me.
I had my light on, but the questions are answered. It seems like this is a relatively small share of both the total road project cost and the total investment in the project overall. And you have to start somewhere. And the problem in establishing an assessment district is very challenging. So I think this is a reasonable direction.
No, I agree. I certainly agree.
Yeah.
No other questions. I'll make a motion.
Okay, so are we clear on the changes we've made today? Because I'm looking at condition of approval 2, 14, the addition of 41, and the changes to finding F.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Orton from County Council. I had one question that probably is not really significant, but the handout dated November 3rd has condition 14 on it with one wording. And the wording that you showed on the screen was slightly different, but they appeared to say the same thing. Are you using the wording in the handout? Is that your suggestion?
No. During the presentation, I requested that we omit sentence 2 of this handout.
Yeah, I understand that had to do with condition number 2. I'm talking about condition 14. This one says issuance of a grading permit for secondary access. The other one said secondary access grading permit that you showed on the screen. So I assume that this is the language that you wanted to use, and I just wanted to clarify that.
Yes.
Thank you.
All good?
All right. Yep, there's no other questions. We'll take a motion.
Yes. I'm actually very happy. I think this is a great-looking project and be a good thing for Adelaide Sellers, certainly, and for the tourism in Paso Robles. So I move that we adopt the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act, Public Resources Code Section 21000XC, and approve the conditional use permit DRC 2013-00049 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A as modified with the memo dated November 5th, and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as modified today.
I will second that.
All right. No, any further discussion? If not, Ramona, you call the roll, please.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner Campbell?
Aye.
Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairman Murphy?
Yes. Any opposed? All right, motion approved. Very good.
Good-looking building, isn't it? Oh, it's been kind of a conglomeration of buildings now. It's going to be really nice.
One of the, but we've had a week approved many things.
Hearing item number two is a hearing to consider a request by John Dutra for a variance coastal development permit. County file number DRC 2014-00017. Supervisorial District Number 2, Shawnee Siang, Project Manager.
Does any member of the commission have any ex parte to disclose?
I visited the site yesterday, but I didn't meet with anyone.
All right. Ms. Siang.
Good morning, Chairman Murphy and Commissioners. For consideration today, staff is presenting an application by John Dutra for a variance to reduce the front setback from 15 to 10 feet and the street side setback from 10 to 3 feet, a minor use permit, a coastal development permit to allow for a The project site is located at 398 Mitchell Drive, Los Osos. It is in the Estero Area Planning Area. It is within the single residential single-family land use category, and it is a bayfront parcel. This is an aerial view of the site. It sits pretty much at the intersection of Mitchell Drive and Doris Avenue. Here's a closer view of the site. As explained in the staff report, there's a bit of history on this parcel that makes it pretty constrained site as it is today. The site itself is approximately 13,000 square feet, and approximately 66% of it is actually dedicated for public coastal access. As shown here in the blue outline, that's the public coastal access easement. A little corner here shown by the yellow outline is actually a private road right-of-way that was part of the original subdivision that was created in 1924. The property includes both the coastal access strip and the corner right-of-way. Now, this parcel is considered a corner lot because the access easement is currently used as a public road. So for corner parcel, the street side setback is applied and is 10 feet as measured from the edge of easement. This is a street view of the parcel currently. Coastal access is shown by the blue outline here. This access is mainly used by pedestrians because there's some parking area. Where's the mouse? Okay, there's a parking area at the entry here, and there's one accessible parking space right close to the water. So traffic is extremely low on this strip, on this gravel strip. The small corner right away here is kind of highlighted by the yellow curved line. As you can see, over time, the strip is adequate for vehicular access, so over time, this corner right-of-way has been squared off with landscaping, signage, and even a utility pole. Here's a site plan showing all the elements outlined. The coastal access easement is the boundary shown with blue line. And besides then that, the site is also subject to a 50-foot wetland setback, which is shown here with a purple dotted line. The deck that is proposed for the remodeling is elevated, and the posts are actually located just outside the setback, wetland setback area. So the only area to add the workshop would be in the front setback. Now, with the strict application of a corner lot definition, the 10-foot setback, street side setback, and the 15-foot front setback will actually leave the applicant with a pretty small, odd-shaped yard to place a feasible-sized workshop in the front. So the applicant is requesting a variance to reduce the corner side setback, which is measured from this curved yellow line here, to 3 feet, and a front setback to 10 feet to place a decent-sized workshop. Here's the floor plan of the proposed deck. The deck at the rear and the workshop in the front. It is an unconditioned workshop. There's no services proposed. It will be access from the exterior. There's no internal connection. This is the elevation of the project site. The workshop addition is going to be in the front. It matches the existing house. The deck is at the rear, is on posts. And as seen from Mitchell Drive, the workshop will basically look like an extension of the existing house. Also, staff would like to present the applicant's intention to landscape a portion of the public access easement area. This proposed landscaping will not be increasing any of the existing vegetation, neither would it actually reduce the coastal access or impair the access in any way. They are also proposing the landscaping will be subject, though, to County Parks review and approval. So the applicants, the agent, and Elizabeth Kavanaugh, the County Parks planner, are here today to answer any questions that you may have on that. So lastly, certain findings need to be made in order to approve a variance. And based on the location and the special circumstances of the existing site, staff finds that these five required findings can be made and supported. Therefore, staff recommends that commissioners approve the variance and a coastal development permit based on the findings in Exhibit A and the revised conditions as submitted today in the memo in Exhibit B. This concludes staff presentation, and I'll be available for questions.
Commissioner Irving?
Quick question. Shawnee, just so I'm pretty sure I understand, the dotted curved line showing the wetland setback, that is the showing the 50-foot distance to the wetland.
That's right.
Okay.
And you said was no requirement for a permit for landscape done in the easement. What about the pavers? Is that considered part of the landscape, or is there any requirement there?
Yes, the pavers is considered part of the landscaping. The entire landscaping, like I said before, will be subject to County Parks satisfaction review and standards. In order to do so, they need to meet County Parks' requirement.
So if I understand it right, the existing setback is 15 feet, the requirement?
That's right, from the front.
You're proposing to reduce that front setback to 10?
That's right. It's a reduction of 5 feet.
All right. Any other Commissioner Topping?
Yeah, this seems like a reasonable project. I just want to make sure that there's nothing in the findings here or the conditions that would materially modify the coastal access as it exists?
No. The the work that's proposed and the variance that's requested does not impair or affect the coastal access at all.
Okay, thank you.
Actually, if I could jump in, I have a question about that coastal access area. Is that, who's the responsible agency for that road?
That will be county.
Is that parks? The coastal access is yours?
It will be under the purview of the county parks.
So I'll have a question for Ms. Kavanaugh in a little bit then, if you want to go to, is there an applicant or whatever?
Okay. All right. At this point, if the applicant would like to come forward and make a presentation, there is an applicant available. They don't have to.
Good morning. My name is John Cloninger. I'm the agent for the applicants. I'm also the designer of the plans that were before you. Shawnee pretty much covered all the bases on this project. I've worked with her closely in designing this project. Given all the oddities and circumstances involving this site, the Dutras just needed some extra space to pursue their personal hobbies and to provide a little extra storage space for their belongings. And this is, as Shawnee expressed, the only place on the site that's possible for any sort of development. So we're, of course, available for any questions you all might have regarding the project.
All right. Thank you. Any questions from commission? None. Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and open public comment. I do not have any speaker slips. I don't see anybody else coming forward, so I'll close public comment. Does staff have any additional comments at this point?
No, I'm more than happy to answer any questions that you may have if this might present some confusing information that I haven't covered yet.
Made it very clear.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Is this Commissioner Irving? Is this your district?
No, it's not, but I believe it's Commissioner Toppings. But I do have a couple questions. First of all, I would like to commend you on your presentation because it certainly clarified a number of questions I had from the written staff report. Ms. Kavanaugh, I would like to discuss parks and the coastal access. This is a really small road, mostly looks like pedestrian traffic. Can parks close it to vehicular access at all? There's one parking space, understood, at the end of the road close to the bay. Could you just close that?
Maybe if we can just ask if the applicant could just tell us.
I think it's set. What do you want?
I'm just curious what the square feet of the house. Yeah, my only question or issue has to do with the variance and the reducing the setback from the front of the road and whether that qualifies as special privilege. And
it looks like existing is 1388.
Yeah.
And the addition is 495.
Okay. So, Ramona, can you please put up the slide? Thanks. So I have some numbers here. So Commissioner Myers, right, the existing house is about 1,300 square feet. The front portion here is a single story. The rear portion is a double story with a garage underneath it. That's why the deck is elevated. The entire lot is almost 13,000 square feet. Easement area, if you would include all the setback and the coastal access easement and the wetland buffer, leaves them with about 2,000 square feet to build on. So, and the addition itself is almost 500 square feet workshop at the front.
Okay. Are there other homes in the area that are closer to the street than 15 feet?
Yes, there is.
There are existing ones?
Yes.
Okay. All right, then. Okay with that, because that's just one of my concerns is in terms of meeting the requirements. I think we have number one on the variances. I think it does it, too, because of the size of the lots and restrictions in the building area. So, all right, any other questions, Commissioner Meyer?
Los Osos has a lot of little interesting corners. And this is one of them. Mitchell Drive is one of the cooler spots in Los Osos, and it's probably the closest to New Zealand you can get in California. not literally, but it's aesthetically. And that little street has a wide variety of structures and a wide variety of setbacks. The older homes down the street a little bit further west have some garages that are almost on the right on the frontage, it looks like. And there's a wide variety of old barn-like structures down the street, and it's just a neat little spot. And these folks are also subject to a really wide variety of old easements and bayfront setbacks, et cetera. So you guys have done a great job, and I know it's a lot of work to go through a variance and talking to parks and blah, 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 but I think your project looks great. And I'm in support of it. I really have no comments. It's also on a little oblique corner. That road's they're subtly in the smallest little corner, so the fact that they're setback, I mean, if you were to draw a line between the houses six to the right and six to the left, this is still behind that line. I don't know if you know what I'm saying, but we have a neighbor in support. We have nobody in opposition. I'm ready to vote.
And I feel like Eric does. It's a very nicely designed project for some folks that have a large lot and can't use any of it. I hope the tax assessor takes that into consideration.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Tubbing.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is. I'm familiar with this area. It's an early subdivision. Probably if we were reviewing a development on the site today for a new subdivision, it would probably look differently. But it is a very nice area, and the project seems to fit in well. And I'm prepared to make a motion for approval.
Very good.
Okay. I move that we approve variance minor use permit and coastal development permit DRC 2014-00017 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
And I'll second, but you do want to add in the little note that we got this morning. The recommendation.
Oh, yeah.
And,
right.
The letter
right.
This morning, November 6th.
With the modification.
All right. Did I get a second?
I seconded.
All right. Ramona, would you call the roll?
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Chairman Murphy?
Yes. Motion approved. This project is in the coastal appealable zone. I don't know if you need to note that for the record or not.
I also want to mention...
That came up before in some hearings.
You know, driving around Los Osos, after all these roads have been improved, I just want to say to Public Works that, you know, it's just the town is looking really good now. The little Los Osos neighborhoods, it feels a lot more prosperous. It feels, you know, the roads are solid, beautiful. I see people out there sweeping their front stoops and sweeping the street. And it was kind of fun to drive around Los Osos. It's really starting to feel like a nice little town, which we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for that. Thank you.
All right, it's 10:15 now. I think we're going to go ahead and take our 15-minute break, and then we'll start with number three. So we'll be back at 10:30.
Optional documents of our 12 general plan elements. Your commission has had worked with us recently on the housing element update. That was successfully done, and Dana Lilly is here with us this morning as well to help answer questions on that. And you also helped us reorganize and the land use and circulation element. And so that was done in this last year. When we look at key accomplishments, well, one of them is to learn how to run the PowerPoint slideshow. Not surprising that water, energy, and stormwater are and will continue to be big issues that are addressed through our general plan efforts. And will come before this commission in the future, issues surrounding those matters as well as the board. As you also know, the board sets priorities that our department is to work on in terms of general plan implementation. We have put together policies, and you know, the Paso Robles groundwater basin is a big issue, and we're working on implementing the urgency ordinance that was passed. And then another huge matter, and you just dealt with the Los Osos lot, is to complete the HCP and the community plan for Los Osos. And then another thing, in addition to the energy efforts that we have going on, is to address workforce housing in the county. Along with the Los Osos community plan, we are also looking to complete, get the environmental impact report started for the San Miguel community plan, and then also to bring infill development standards that focus on streamlining issues to your commission sometime next year as well. In addition, we are now working on the biennial report for RMS rather than an annual report to do the biennial report. And we're pleased to announce that we have opened since July the North County Service Center. We call that an in-progress priority in that we're still adjusting to meet the needs of the public in that in North County. We're finding it successful. More and more people show up each week. So that's an exciting thing we are able to provide to the North County citizens. Some of the many ongoing programs we have is to address the air quality, to reduce the impacts to air quality from our county operations. And then we have, again, many energy efficiency and conservation programs that we have. We have an energy section in our department that works with the EVC and other folks and community members to home builders to increase energy efficiency in our projects in the county. Another aspect of the annual report is to report how we're doing on terms of development and the building permits. And you can see over the last couple of years, we're seeing from 2010 to now 13-14, we're seeing more single-family dwellings being constructed again, and that's a good sign for the economy and activity in our department. You'll notice on the multifamily, last couple of years we haven't seen any units, but that tends to tie to one or two projects. One or two projects come in with multifamily, and that's going to swing way up. So we, looking with to encourage a wide variety of housing types in our communities, and that would include multifamily dwellings. In terms of affordability, again, we've seen a large drop-off since the 2010. Really, Dana might be able to share why there was a peak in 2010, but even comparing it to 2009, 2011, we've seen a drop-off on the construction of affordability. And we continue to help allocate grant funds, and you can see on the screen what we've done there, and we help with our in-lieu fees, with market rate housing, we get an in-lieu fee for affordable housing impact fees, and we helped apply that to 167 units. Not only has the residential activity seen some increases, we're also seeing activity increases in the commercial development. And the valuation maybe has gone
13-14. Is there any, you got any guesstimates, Mr. Lilly? What happened?
I was afraid you were going to ask me that.
And I'm sure you were prepared with an answer, too.
So, well, one thing I would say, affordable housing units, when they're built, isn't as sensitive to economic swings, because they require public subsidies anyway. In fact, the nonprofits will tell you when we have a recession, then developers and property owners call the nonprofits saying, I have some lots or some property I want to sell you. The affordable housing is really more dependent on when they can amass the large amount of public subsidy dollars necessary to make a project go forward. That's really the key. So in 2010, I don't want to guess, but I believe there were apartment projects in unincorporated communities. No. There was a subdivision of homes that was completed in Napomo.
Mm-hmm.
and
people self-help.
People
did something
self-help
down there, didn't
yeah
they? Yeah.
But that's not multifamily.
Right. No, I was just you don't need to stress over it. I was just it's just a number that jumps out so much, and you know we just. Ordinary residential market. You don't inside city limits. You don't see a lot of apartments being built.
And that's what it looks like in our performance measure reports to the board as part of the countywide budget. That's one of our performance measures: is how many affordable units were either acquired or completed and built during that fiscal year. And it wildly swings. There's been years when it's zero, and other years where it's hundreds. That's just because a couple of big projects got completed with lots of subsidy.
You have questions for me?
Can you speak to your thoughts on varying levels of affordability? We've been building affordable housing, but there's multiple levels within that strata. And is there thoughts from staff on where we might be spending more energy and where we need more work and where we're successful?
Sure.
I'd love to hear this from you.
Well, so the county has definitions of housing affordability that's all based more pretty closely to 30% of the incomes of assumed of the household. So there's workforce housing. So, for example, something the county currently considers workforce housing is affordable to a four-person household who doesn't make any more than $123,000, that can be built in quite a few unincorporated communities now without subsidy dollars. Three-bedroom home could sell for up to $489,000. So the homes being built in San Miguel, for example, are just naturally going to be meeting those. From the county's perspective, we're probably not as short on the workforce housing side as we are on the further down income groups. Some of the cities where a lot of the jobs are, from this housing planner's perspective, ought to focus somewhat on workforce housing because that's where some jobs are. The next income group down is moderate income, a three-bedroom house for $353,000 right now. Still, in some of our towns, you can build that without subsidy dollars. Where we're lacking the most is really for rental housing for very low income and low income. And that's becoming a big challenge for the county right now and its nonprofits who have a very big program trying to attack the homelessness issue. We've been very successful between the county and the nonprofits in acquiring some federal subsidy dollars to attack the homelessness problem and get a lot of our homeless into housing. It's going to be very difficult finding the rental housing that will accept the Section 8 vouchers or the other type of vouchers that are going to be available. And the extremely low-income housing and very low-income housing, which should be probably mostly rental housing, has historically been underbuilt in the county for lots of reasons and will probably continue that way for a while.
Are there programs that we should be focusing on or trajectories that we should be trying to head down that we're not?
We have programs in the housing element. One of them is to rezone a considerable amount of land for higher density multifamily housing, but it's going to be a struggle for the county to do that just given our water constraints and others. Honestly, I think the city's probably will have a better ability to meet that segment of the demand. Doesn't mean the county should not try, but we have to be honest about it. I think the cities are in a better position to provide the water, sewer, and other infrastructure needed for the highest density housing.
Thank you.
James, I have a question about your North County Service Center. Is that on the – do you guys have that on the website for planning?
I'm presuming the term new development dependent upon a well is rural residential and could affect our housing numbers that we're just questioning here a little bit. I'm surprised there isn't a more direct way of saying it includes building of single family units when mm-hmm. needing a well.
That's a good point. This is a summary. It obviously doesn't cover all the points of it. And you're correct that it would have an effect on where housing needs to go, and it probably backs up the point that Dana was talking about in the cities and the urban areas.
Sick.
You'll see that shift to those areas.
In piggybacking on that, on the next page, given the actions or the lack of action by the Board of Supervisors, what is the status now with item 5 or implementation of the ordinance?
Let Mr. Wolken take a crack at that.
Mike Wolken, planning staff. The staff continues to implement the residential portion of the urgency ordinance implementation, which is the residential offset program. The board recently, as you know, decided to continue consideration of the agricultural offset program that was proposed by the Resource Conservation District. However, staff will continue to implement as we can aspects of the ag offset program as we have been doing to date. It's just that the more complicated situations are harder to deal with for staff. But
Mike, did that go back to the RCD, or are you guys, I presume Mr. Caruso, this is his bailiwick, isn't it? And is he working on that to present to the RCD? Who's actually carrying the water
here? We are doing that in-house and have been since the board passed the urgency ordinance. Most of the projects we've been dealing with have been the simpler ones. For example, on the same site, same well, same site.
Will, as you guys come forward again, will that ordinance come through us, or will it go, because it was instigated directly or at the instruction of the supervisors, will it just bypass the Planning Commission and go direct to them? How do those ordinances, Mr. McNulty? I see you reaching for your.
I'll defer to counsel.
Yes.
I'm Tim McNulty with the County Counsel's Office. You know, what the board was trying to accomplish there and what it will try to accomplish when it comes back, is a resolution which provides direction to staff on how to interpret the urgency ordinance. It's not an amendment to an ordinance, and it's not an ordinance itself. So I think the answer is it won't be coming to the Planning Commission in the regular course.
Well, let's speculate further. We've got approximately a year left of the emergency ordinance. What happens at that point if there is no, if you're codifying the programs contained in the, or the restrictions contained within the emergency ordinance, and you want to make those permanent ordinances? How does that process work, or are you saying that it can be done simply by resolution?
No, there's really two things going on. One is to try to create a program which can become a permanent feature of the county's land use regulatory scheme, and that's certainly something that we hope to do with this program. The other is to try to address those people who need to make use of the ability to do a conversion during this period of the urgency ordinance, and that was being done through a resolution which directed staff about how to proceed.
So the permanent element will, in fact, come back through an amendment to the, or change to the land use ordinance will come back through here on its way to the supervisor.
Yes, it would have to. So any amendment to the zoning ordinance, and that's what that would be required to come to the Planning Commission.
And Mike, do you have any numbers or idea of how the residential program is working, how many people have applied or paid, and you know, houses retrofitted? I've seen postcards that have gone out from the county to pre-1994 houses, I think it is, suggesting, you know, if you want to upgrade, come here, call us up. I was just wondering if you have any statistical information on that.
I have some very rough information. It's approximately 50 or so houses have been retrofitted as part of the residential offset program. I think there's some others that are in progress. So altogether, those retrofits would have saved enough water to allow about between 11 to 12 or so new houses to be built.
Okay. Rather than drill 10 wells, for instance, I was just curious if that has surfaced anywhere.
I'm not aware. In general, the county's policy in the conservation and open space element has been to discourage the proliferation of small water companies. I'm not sure who what the agency is, if it's the PUC that actually approves those. Perhaps council could chime in on that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so you have areas, say, like the Ground Squirrel Hollow Road Association Group or whatever they call that. You have organizations that have formed, like Independence Ranch is road thing. What's the process if they started having a lot of wells going dry in that area? I'm sure it's not simple, but how? Any guidelines that could be suggested to the public?
I was told by the developers of Spanish Lakes out of Paso Robles that when they applied to use those existing grandfathered lots, they were discouraged to put wells on each one, and they formed
a community.
Water. A nice well, a backup well, and storage facilities, and then the distribution pumps. Yeah.
So again, I'm Tim McNulty. So the county definitely has a policy that discourages the creation of independent mutual water companies that are small, because it's been our experience that they're difficult to maintain over time and that they generally have a lot of management issues. But your question is a little different in that, as I think if you wanted to form an assessment district, perhaps to sell bonds to raise money to create infrastructure. We do have a program that the Public Works Department runs where a group of neighbors wants to organize to do something like that. They can work with the engineers in the Public Works Department to prepare the necessary materials to do that. And it requires usually some sort of an initial deposit. I don't know if Frank is aware of exactly how it works, but I know that neighborhoods have, in fact, organized themselves and worked with the Public Works Department to create these districts from time to time.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with any that we have done like that recently.
I'd be interested in knowing who the point person is in Public Works that to direct that kind of inquiry to, when members of the public, particularly in certain, some of the antiquated, quote-unquote antiquated subdivisions, were... If those people were aware of the process of doing something jointly between, say, anywhere from 2 to 10 houses in a neighborhood, I think it would be useful information to get out in front of the public.
You know, it would vary, too, on water or sewer even. It would probably be better to start with environmental health. Because they would be the ones regulating those things.
Jay, I see you.
I would agree with that. If you're talking in 2 to 10 range, I would start with environmental health. And then if the notion was to go larger, they would be able to provide some direction as to where to turn. Another thing I heard mentioned was comparing it to the road districts in Ground Squirrel Hollow.
Well, we have these districts that have been formed.
Now, that would be those are CSDs. I would start with LAFCO on that to increase
their authorities.
Their authorities,
okay.
Yes.
Now, that's if there's an existing CSD, but I don't know that, you know, I think you can have an assessment district, obviously, outside of the CSD. So
that's true. There is, I think, Ground Squirrel Hollow is an assessment district, but Independence Ranch is a CSD.
And I'm pretty sure Ground Squirrel Hollow is a CSD as well.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay. Well, you know, maybe instead of leaving it vague, like contact environmental health, or maybe it's a public works thing, somebody could get back to us with specific information that should, you know, as a suggestion to people in those areas that are being affected, the people that can't afford to drill the 700-foot deep well but could possibly get together with some neighbors and drill essentially a community well. I mean, sure, there's lots of issues to be worked out, but one of the complaints you hear a lot is, you know, I can't afford it. I can't afford to drill a well.
You know, it's shallow wells in the shallowest part of the island.
Well, the old, you know, and houses that were built in the 70s, you drilled 250 feet, and now you got to go 600-700 feet. So it'd be interesting to have the information to be able to present. I think it should be, I don't know whether promoted is the right word, but to give somebody an alternative to talk about. That's just my thought on that.
If you have a particular case or a particular person in mind, they were, you know, you can feel free to direct them
to go out at the same time. And so we should start working on that literally any day now.
Okay, so those are working together. The community plan and the draft plan are moving along together. And would we be are we thinking February or April, June?
It usually takes about 12 weeks to get a draft out on an EIR for something like that. So spring is still fair.
And that's Michael's purview there. So he's been involved with the community meetings and things of that sort.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, and based on a little bit of dealings I have, I believe the Mutual Water Companies are regulated by the state of California is where that activity actually takes place.
You might be right.
Commissioner Campbell.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got my questions answered.
Okay. Commissioner Topping.
I understand this is a retrospective report and not looking ahead except on a very limited basis, but I did have some looking ahead questions. So wherever I saw 2015 mentioned that of an item of interest, I had a question, and that the first one was the Los Osos community plan update. Is that when it says early 2015, can you tell us a little bit more on that?
Early 2015 is real accurate. I would hope January of 2015 to have that ready.
Ready for
the public review draft. I'm getting help from Mike on this one.
Yeah, Mike Wolken, that's right. The public review draft is the first draft that goes out to the public, and we are looking to release that in hopefully January. It is a high priority for the department, and once the public review draft is out, then we will get comments from the public and prepare the environmental impact report and then release a draft EIR together with the public hearing draft, and that will be later in the year.
So that would be late 2015, probably.
Yes.
For commission.
Yes. Oh well, as far as going to the commission, I'm not sure of the schedule right now for going to the commission on that. But the draft EIR and public hearing draft would be later in the year. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact date right now. But the first draft will be coming out very soon.
And then the resource management system, what are the prospects for that? I know that I'm asking.
Is this the biennial report, resource management system?
Yeah.
Biennial report. That will be going to the board in, I believe, February of next year. Part of the normally it's done at the end of the year, but this year, if you recall, your commission worked on some changes to the resource management system,
right.
And those changes, if they get adopted by the board in early December, will actually affect how the resource biennial report looks. So we're kind of holding that a little bit until the changes to the resource management system are looked at by the board, and then we'll know whether to include all those changes in the biennial report.
Yep. And that hearing is going to occur in December, you anticipate, at the board level on the RMS changes?
Yes, it's scheduled for December the 2nd, I believe.
Okay, and then last but not least, I noticed that the safety element was amended to presumably it was referencing the addition of the local hazard mitigation plan.
Yes.
Back in December. The question I had, though, was Has that pretty much been set aside by other priorities by the board at this point? You were working on that for a while.
The safety element is one of the next things to be looked at. We are focusing on our highest priorities right now.
Sure.
There are a lot of things on our plate. We'll be checking back in with the board soon and to find out how they see the priorities. And I think that's normally done in, I think the next one will be in February, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm not positive on that.
Okay.
But we'll be checking in again with the board to see how they see our priorities stacking up. So we have not started to work on the safety element yet.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So you got
project. They had been made aware of it many years ago, but then when it came forward through this process, they only found out about it at the very last second and had to jump through a lot of hoops in order to make any comments. And they had a lot of residents, hundreds of residents, in fact, that were greatly affected by that project, and it came out that we saw in force. And I can't help but think that might happen anywhere around the incorporated areas, which are surrounded by unincorporated areas. In many of our unincorporated areas, we have advisory committees, Avila, there's advisory bodies and all sorts of little in Santa Margarita, et cetera. But in those areas of our county that surround the incorporated areas, we don't really have advisory bodies. And so, actually, the second point, I've given you a little piece of paper here, and the second program basically was specifically referring to San Luis Obispo, but could just as easily refer to Aurora Grande or Paso Robles, et cetera. And the idea is to try to come up with a way to develop a committee, an advisory body that would work with the local jurisdiction and the county unincorporated areas to together try to determine the future of the land surrounding, such that if there were a subdivision proposed or some project that affected everybody, that it would be discussed by the group as a whole, not just the unincorporated county by themselves. And so the text of my proposed program to that subject is: the Board of Supervisors, along with the City of San Luis Obispo, I'm just specifically referring to San Luis on this one, along with the City of San Luis Obispo, shall develop a San Luis Obispo Planning Area Advisory Council, and I'm calling that SLOPAC, but it could be called whatever, for the review of any discretionary projects and all strategic planning within the unincorporated portions of the San Luis Obispo planning area. Depending on the location of the specific project, the SLOPAC shall report to the supervisor of the appropriate district or, in the case of an area-wide issue, the Board of Supervisors as a whole. And within the San Luis Obispo region, we did used to have an Edna Valley, I think it was called Edna Valley Advisory Body. I don't think that body exists anymore. But it's just something I think that both the city and the county would benefit from. Is sort of mutual planning together seemed wise, and I'm open to debate on that subject, and I'll come back to my second program idea in a minute.
Yeah, I think the advisory commissions or councils, as they're called now, are at the whim, so to speak, of the supervisor in his district as to whether he wants them or doesn't want them. And I don't know if the Board of Supervisors would be interested in codifying that, so to speak, that they're required to form any specific advisory body.
Well, that works when you have a region that's one specific supervisor, but in the case of San Francisco, we have all the supervisors involved, so it becomes a little bit more vague, and maybe that vagarity causes issues.
Yeah, I think the concept sounds good, but mainly in the San Luis area, I think it's where it applies, since it's the largest urban area, yet there's three or four districts that touch the city that are affected. So I think the concept's good. That if it, I support the idea, so to speak, but I don't know that how far it'll go as far as getting any formal adoption at the board level.
I can talk to that a little bit. I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. The the board's relationship to the advisory councils is a little odd. They're really neither fish nor fowl in our view. There was a board resolution, I believe, back in 1996, which provided some direction to people who wanted to form advisory councils. We also have a handbook that we distribute to those advisory councils that operate. We send staff people to advisory councils, and the individual board members use some of their discretionary district funds to financially support the operation of some of the advisory councils. At the same time, the county takes the position that the advisory councils are not of us. They're not part of the county. We have no control over how they operate or what they do. And we really see them as independent bodies created by themselves for the purpose of advising their individual board members. And so we try to maintain a distance, if you will, between the county and these advisory bodies. Their members are generally not appointed by the supervisor of the district. I think in every case now with the current councils, there hasn't been any direct appointment by either the board or the individual supervisor. The councils have perhaps been started that way in the past, but through many years have gotten to the point where they elect themselves. So they're quite independent from us, and it would be a pretty significant policy change for the board to go out and start to create these things. It also, you know, that would raise a number of issues about the cost of maintaining them, the potential exposure associated with actions that they might take. It would kind of make them more formalized, perhaps, than they are now. But all that said, there's no legal reason why the Planning Commission couldn't send a recommendation like this.
City of San Luis Obispo, and also impact each of the other districts. I'm not quite sure. I'm trying to figure a way to resolve that conflict and just design a way for everybody to work together. I think the city does have some sort of language, or the county, rather, has some sort of language that says they will work with the city of San Luis Obispo on anything within, I forget the map area. Maybe it's the city's
sphere
of influence. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman? Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to add a little bit to Commissioner Myers' a point about cooperation between the county and the cities. In the case of San Luis Obispo, the county does have an MOA, a memorandum of agreement, with the city of San Luis Obispo, and as we do with most of the other cities in the county, as to how we coordinate on development proposals. And so there's a number of policies and in those memorandums of agreement about how we do that and about closely coordinating with the city on certain development proposals and referring to them projects and so forth. So I just
is it any project that. Or is it specific? Is it only discretionary or is it?
It's specified in the MOA. In the MOA, it's generally discretionary general plan amendments and discretionary projects. I think it probably varies from MOA to MOA. I'm not sure of the.
Well, the Perosi one's a perfect example because the city got really surprised by that one.
Is that in their sphere of influence, that particular location, or not? Is that why they – I would assume anything in their sphere of influence, they would be involved.
Mr. Chairman?
Involved.
I can interrupt. I have on the screen – this is in our land use ordinance. This is a required application referral to the cities of San Luis Obispo and Pismo Beach, and it speaks to land division discretionary permits, land division general plan amendments. So – when a project comes in, in this case, if it's in the planning area for the San Luis Obispo planning area, the whole area, every discretionary application gets referred to the city. And then Pismo Beach has a map on the previous screen as to when they get a referral. So
this is based on this is based on
the planning application areas. You're speaking of, the recycling, the green waste recycling, should have been referred in the city staff. Should have received notice right up front.
Who is it referred? How is it referred to the city?
We refer these to the planning departments.
Okay. There have been several subdivisions within the sphere in the county that the city was surprised by. And actually, council people have come to me and going, wait, how did this happen? And so that's why I'm talking. I wouldn't be talking if it hadn't happened. So
sounds
maybe
like it's a San Luis Obispo issue, yeah. Not our issue.
Eric, so. I have two thoughts. One, and again, these aren't necessarily to be antagonistic, but just food for thought. But you know, I have found over the years, and just looking at these advisory councils, that sometimes they tend to get their own little politics going amongst themselves. Number one, and number two, perhaps think they have more authority to do things than not. And I would be. We don't need another one for those two reasons.
Absolutely.
But I also would ask you this question. You used the Perosi thing, which is a wonderful example. But how would it have? How would the outcome of that have changed? We had 2 days of rooms full of people. How would the outcome of that have changed had we had an advisory council?
Yeah, for me, it's absolutely.
It would have come out the same.
It's not the idea of the advisory council. It's just the idea of working together with the city more closely. And I'm reaching for how to do that.
Sounds like we have a way to do it. Somebody just dropped the ball. At least in this case, perhaps.
Well, I guess maybe then the program or the idea is to have the county and the city work more closely in some way to be determined by mutual staff effort, so that we can avoid those kinds of conflicts in the future.
You have it in the plan.
Yeah. It's here in this planning area document that Jay just brought up.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I think 2 weeks ago your commission had a great example of that working well with the Chevron Tank Farm cleanup. Mm-hmm. Years of working together. But again, that's something that's at the forefront the city had great interest in. And in general, over the years that I've been doing this, great working relationship with in between staff to staff level, and that's typically not a problem. So again, I don't know what happened with that particular project. We have it in place, and we tend to work things out quite well.
Well, I'll move on. I don't think I have.
I have a comment on.
Sure, Commissioner Tobin.
In the case of Perosi, the what didn't come to light right away was the city's specific plan, and I think that was brought up somewhat area and not that specific project, and that was the foundation. And so my point is that could have been headed off at the pass, just 2020 hindsight, by some advance information using the waste management plan on the one side and the specific plan that the city's had on the other. So perhaps one of the things that could help ameliorate situations where you have this particular situation around a slow city would be to make sure that that there's a full communication of both directions. And perhaps that was done, perhaps it was something was overlooked. But I think it's a unique case. The advisory councils are basically for strictly unincorporated areas. And they do actually provide a helpful input to the commission. Our staff does actually attend those meetings and listens to those to what they have to say and report and includes those things in the report. So if you can include advisory council recommendations in the report, perhaps we could include known plans that are that cities have adopted that are extraterritorial in the staff reports. That's just a comment. Thank you.
It's a hard one to resolve, really, because it's complex. But I'm going to get to the second one.
Eric, just to follow up on that real briefly, perhaps that's a conversation between you and your supervisor, and take it that way.
Well, it varies greatly, district to district, obviously.
Yes. I agree with Commissioner Campbell that the idea of another body is not the solution, but that just sometimes creates more controversy than solution. But the intent is to just find ways to
improve communication. Good point.
And any efforts staff would have in that direction, and it could be Commissioner, the same problem with at the city level. The city needs to be more involved, perhaps. I don't know where the issues lie, where the disconnect happens, but I presume even just being aware of it and talking about it, everybody starts to think about it more.
Commissioner Topping's point about the waste management plan is an excellent point there, in that the Perosi's and their application were they worked off of the waste management plan.
That's
right. Oops. ran into a buzzsaw on the when they hit the city. So, yeah.
So it was conflicting expectations. And
houses.
which actually may have been avoidable, maybe not. Maybe everybody was going along on their own track, parallel. With different
exactly.
objectives yeah. in mind, and so actually, Commissioner Meyer has a point that how do you resolve those kinds of communications gaps, and maybe I don't know the answer, but I'm thinking that this is a worthwhile area of exploration.
Well, I think the point here is that it's up to the supervisors to give direction to these other agencies that. Maybe remind them of their responsibility to report cross-channel more. That's a good point.
It seems like I have some recollection at that hearing that the city attended and they brought in a memorandum of understanding or agreement regarding development out there of a large annexation or project that actually came up during the hearing. Mm. I don't remember the context of it now.
Yeah, there were 1,000 houses.
Yeah, they were going to, and right. how that maybe conflicted with putting this in, I'm thinking, well, that's great to know now, but what happened
it was probably Orchid
6
area.
Months earlier, a year earlier when it started.
Right. Which was new information to the county because it had just effectively just been approved a few months earlier, or maybe earlier.
Eric, before you jump to your next one, I have a quick question for Jay, which was simply, on 318J, the permit, residential single families, and also lot line adjustments, do you have any, is there any kind of an average of processing time that you could come up with, or any kind of, do you guys keep any statistical information on that? I come in for a building permit. How long does it take me on average to get through? I come in for a lot line adjustment. How long does it take me to get through?
I'm Bill Robeson from the County Planning Department. So the first question was how long on average does it take for a building permit for a
single-family
dwelling?
Single-family.
You know, it depends, but the first round of plan check is approximately.
So my second point, also under the border skirmish title, recently the city of San Luis has been updating its land use and circulation elements and has been at odds with the Airport Land Use Commission over some language, which is, I'm neither here nor there on who's right and who's wrong, whatever, but they've been unable to find common ground. They've been unable to reach compromise. And so this program I'm suggesting here basically says that the Board of Supervisors shall encourage the San Luis Obispo County Airport Land Use Commission to work together with the county and airport adjacent local governing bodies to apply the airport land use standards as set forth in the Caltrans Division of Aeronautics California Airport Land Use Planning Handbook. Within the Airport Land Use Planning Handbook that Caltrans puts out, which is the governing document basically over airports, there is language about the safety zones, and those safety zones can be modified by the individual jurisdictions based on local conditions. And we've been unable to, these two bodies have been unable to find common ground, and we need to have some mechanism by which they can mediate, or at least require them to mediate, so we're not stuck at loggerheads, because we've been stuck at loggerheads. And I'm, again, not recommending who's right or who's wrong, but loggerheads doesn't get us anywhere. We need to find a mechanism, and I would like to suggest to the Board of Supes that the mechanism is to somehow ask them to find accommodation with each other. And is there comments from you guys on that?
Is this a way to this, and I may not understand this situation completely, but given the election and all of that, so the new city council for San Luis Obispo has its ability to override the commission, but then there's issues of liability, I guess, or various other issues that might affect the city. So what you're suggesting here is really that the Board of Supervisors serve as a mediator.
Not necessarily the board, but just act as a recommend. They would recommend that the bodies try to find a way to cooperate. So basically, the override is just exactly that. It's overriding the authority of the Airport Land Use Commission.
Mr. McNulty, is there a hierarchy here?
Yeah, what's the relationship?
Of authority?
If you've got a county land use authority and you have a city council, right, they can override the county land use. What is the structure relationship there that could happen?
Yeah. The override provision that has been the subject of a lot of newspaper articles recently is allowed by the Public Utilities Code, so it's the specific provision that creates airport land use planning commissions and airport land use plans allows for this override when particular findings can be met. And I think the question, you know, that this is a very complicated issue, as Commissioner Meyer indicated, the issue really is, can those findings be met based on the evidence that's in the record regarding this particular amendment to the city's land use and circulation element. And obviously the Airport Land Use Commission so far believes that they cannot be met, and City Council majority sees otherwise, I think. I think Commissioner Meyer is correct that clearly what's needed here is some kind of mediation of the dispute. I don't know whether recommending this language to the board will aid that or not, but I don't particularly see a problem. I did mention to Commissioner Meyer that I thought his language was slightly politically worded, in that one of the disputes here is whether or not you apply the Airport Land Use Planning Handbook exactly as it is written, or whether you take advantage of the provision that he mentioned that allows some modification of safety zones based on local topography and other conditions. And if you read his language literally here, one might read that to say that he's suggesting you don't use that second provision that allows for modifications. And I think if you are going to send something to them, and it's entirely up to you, that we might want to change this so that it says something like governing bodies to apply the airport land use standards as permitted by the Caltrans Division of Aeronautics, instead of as set forth in, because when you say as set forth in, you're sort of saying exactly as it is laid out there.
Mr. McNulty, you're absolutely right. I agree with you. I didn't intend to that.
But Eric and I have had this discussion off record before. It's clearly the case that these two bodies need to resolve their problems, because it's not a resolution of this issue for the city to simply override the Airport Land Use Commission. It just is going to create as many problems as it solves for those projects that wish to proceed in that airport land use planning area.
And whichever way it goes, it's like if we go with one body's decision, it's completely at odds with the first body. If we go with the other body's decision, it's completely at odds with the second body. And so it's like, come on, kids, let's discuss this and make it.
Anyway, given that we don't have this exactly on our agenda.
We're affected. We're also represented on the Airport Land Use Commission. And one of its decisions was to recommend to a particular city that a business park that was coming in across from the airport lay out the internal street pattern so that there was a street that, instead of being perpendicular, that was actually parallel to the extension of the runway. So the flights would take off over that street, and there was open space for crash hazards. And in fact, the airport owner, life was saved because we kept that street open. She came down and was able to land in an open area because of the coordination. So it can be done. The question I have, I don't understand the Airport Land Use Commission composition here in this particular county. I understand that the county staffs it, right? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Mr. Robeson actually is the staff to the airport.
Yes. Okay, so the airport, the question is...
The commission composition is required by the Public Utilities Code, so that's established by code.
So is there interjurisdictional representation?
Yeah, there is. The city mayor's city selection committee makes appointments to the commission, as does the Board of Supervisors. And I believe there's also a spot for the commission itself to appoint a member to itself.
So is there representation by the city of San Luis Obispo?
Oh, yes. There's a lot of representation.
On the commission itself?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So then the county has an interest, an economic interest in the growth of the airport. That's the other thing that occurs to me, that this is a regional facility, and the county is the steward of, economic growth in that particular regard. So the what I've been, had just reading what I do from the papers, what I've been having a hard time understanding is, isn't there a mechanism, a process by which the and the airport land use plan is what 40 years old or something like that? Is that
no, correct? That's not true.
That's been updated.
Yes.
So the
airport land use plan was updated in the 2000s. I know that.
It's been recently updated.
Yes, okay. And they're in the process of another update right now.
Oh, they are. So maybe does that update give an opportunity for the two sides to come together?
Yes, we hope so. And again, I should caution us. We're probably getting pretty far off of what we have agendized for today.
Yeah. Well,
and part of that's my fault. I recognize it. Sorry.
I'll just restate the
recommendation.
The program is a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors, and I'll read it.
Your mic.
Revisions.
Mike, please. Thank you.
The program is a recommendation, and I'll just read it with the changes that, as I heard Tim say. The Board of Supervisors shall encourage the San Luis Obispo County Airport Land Use Commission to work together with the county and the airport adjacent local governing bodies to apply the airport land use standards as permitted by the Caltrans Division of Aeronautics California Airport Land Use Planning Handbook. And it just seemed like a relatively benign recommendation, and I may not even do anything. It's just kind of like, hello, guys.
Sure.
So that's all.
No problem with that.
All
right.
I don't have any problem with you doing that.
Okay. And the other one I'll let lay because it's too complicated of a...
Okay. And if we recommend, we have to have a motion. If we have a motion, does it cover all of our recommendations that we may want to make, or do we make separate motions for an individual recommendation? Or do we even take a vote on this?
I think they're just comments. I'm not sure it should be under our purview to make a motion or
I don't know if we vote on this.
Recommendation.
I was under the impression we took no action today.
I'll recommend this one. Yeah, I understand that.
You accept the report.
You have a staff recommendation on page 3-1, and that's going to
consider, and if desired, recommend revisions. So we're talking about including this as a revision to the report.
No. So what Commissioner Meyer is suggesting would probably best be treated in some kind of a transmittal letter that transmits your recommendation that says something like, we hereby recommend this general plan annual progress report, and in addition, the commission is suggesting that the board consider adoption of a new program. The new program is as follows, something like that.
Yeah.
All right. So before we have that motion, is there anything else that anybody would like to discuss further? No. All right.
Well, then I will make a motion that we draft a letter of recommendation. What are we calling it?
I would
progress report. And and include this letter that we've just been referring to.
And I will second that motion.
Ramona?
Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Chairman Murphy?
Yes. All right, so that's approved. With that, I will for a motion to take all testimony documents into record.
So moved.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. So moved. And I'll take a motion to adjourn this meeting until the next regular meeting scheduled for December 11, 2014.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Meeting adjourned.
11:38.